approval of the minutes.
Do we have a quorum?
No, you do not have a quorum, and let me make a couple of announcements. One, if you haven't had a chance to meet Lynn Haney, she's the new chair of the Crab Management Advisory Committee, and also Jimmy Dean Close has also joined the committee, appointed by John Bull. And I think that probably he couldn't be here tonight, but next time, yes. Then I also wanted to let you know that the purpose for this meeting, usually we don't have a meeting until we have the winter dredge survey results. I mean, that's been pretty typical. But we thought it might be good to get the committee together so that at least you can talk about some ideas, things that are on your mind. We've just come out of a pretty slack 2013 harvest season, and we'll go over that. We'll go over some information on that in just a little while. But that's the reason for the meeting. Anything you do want to sort of propose, bring forward, you know by now, having been part of the process, that it all hinges on the winter dredge survey results. So, for example, if someone were to say, we want to increase a certain amount of pots, for example, I think that would be fine, but what staff would tell you is once we have the results from the winter dredge survey and they're good, let's say, then that's the time that the commission could act. So the commission is still bound by the management plan, which started in 2008. The commission is still bound by the control rule, which many of you are very aware of, and also the winter dredge survey results are very important as usual. So I just wanted to let you know that, and I know we don't have a quorum, but maybe a few more will show up.
We can still move forward with approval of the minutes at this point?
You can't approve the minutes without a quorum, but that's okay.
I do have a comment. On top of page 4, it says that the second motion, 7 in favor, 0 opposed, and 1 abstention. And then it said, I opposed the motion in the following sentence. I suspect I voted against it.
Why are you changing your mind like that?
Not, well, that's the point. So somebody needs to check and just see if
yes,
there's an indication of
we'll
that.
We'll listen to the tape.
That was it.
Mrs. Chairwoman. Just one quick question. We don't have a quorum. Rob, there's, I think, at least two people on the, looking at this, these minutes, there's at least two people on this list that I don't think have been to a meeting in about 2 years. Are we still working on reformulating this committee so we'll be more likely to have a quorum in the future? Or did y'all call through and ask people at one time or something like that?
The only one, thank you for saying that, the only one who called me was Ronald Jett. And he said he couldn't be here because he had a Board of Supervisors meeting. That's it. But just yesterday, we noticed there were some folks who hadn't been showing up as well. And typically in the past, before he was the acting commissioner, John Bull would review that information and make recommendations to the commissioner. And we are, Joe Grist had asked the other day, we are going through and looking at the number of meetings that folks have not attended on the idea that maybe we need some new members. And if you remember, I think Ty Farrington last year was sort of commenting on that at a couple of meetings, and we did make some new appointments. There were some new appointments, so maybe that's in order again.
Thank you.
And I would like to say that staff has adopted a sort of posture that is not standing up, because we would like to have the freedom to have input from different staff members. And I became increasingly aware that it's very limiting for one person to be up at the podium who doesn't have all the information, and my staff, who might be reticent to come up to the podium to give me information or to someone else, it makes for a much better meeting for us just to interact with you from here. So when we have our PowerPoint will be here, although a few staff members will be going over the slides. So I didn't want you to think it was bad manners. It's actually for efficiency.
So the judge survey is not done yet, Mr. Riley? The judge survey, they're still working on that?
Well, they should be. Dr. Lipschitz is here. He can answer that directly.
Yes, the weather has hit us pretty hard this year, so yeah.
You're still working on it? Gotcha. What do you think? That'll go into March or the end of March?
March.
Is it fixed for this committee?
I think we need eight for a quorum. I think we need eight for a quorum.
Nine.
Okay.
So at this point.
So yeah, we're still short, right?
Eight.
Is anybody on the phone? Nobody on the phone today? Any phone numbers?
Yeah, Dan Dyes didn't contact us, and he usually does. He's the one who's usually on the phone.
At this point, is it okay to move forward with discussion?
Absolutely.
On request to increase the peeler pot limit? And Mr. Raleigh?
You want to give that?
Or is it?
Yep. Pass it around again. Back in January, we sent you an update, kind of a precursor to this meeting in a sense. We hadn't scheduled this meeting yet, but we wanted to get some information out to you. So we sent you a couple of items that we were receiving some constituent responses. First thing we did, though, we provided you an update where we were with the whole trigger exercise as far as the review that the commission requested last October. And that has been passed on now to the Chesapeake Bay Stock Assessment Committee, which is a committee that operates under the Fisheries Goal Information Implementation Team, under the basically the federal Chesapeake Bay office. They received a request for them to review it through basically the Goal Information Implementation Team. They afforded down to the Chesapeake Bay Stock Assessment Committee for their review. The committee has not received the document formally yet and has not scheduled the review, but that will take place before the winter dredge survey results occurs, because they'll get that out of the way so that when they have their May meeting, they'll be focusing just on winter dredge survey. Along in the same...
I have a request.
Yes, sir.
We have information for the fishery performance in 2013, 2012, 2011 slides that might be helpful to the discussions that you're going to have on the peeler pot limit and also on the pot categories. If I may, it might be a good idea for the committee to see that information first, if that's all right. Okay. Joe, you've got this in.
I did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So what we'll do is we'll just... Okay. So what we're going to do is just go through a couple slides amongst the staff tonight with you. The first one is something you've seen before on this committee. We usually review it with you when we get the update in the spring and again in the fall when we're talking management measures. But this is the control rule, the adult female abundance. Remember that we are doing the jurisdictional management based on the female abundance currently. And this is just an update of something you've seen before. The very last data point on this slide is the 2013 data point for females at 147 million. And that's in number, not in pounds. So this is an update where we are. We did see an uptick, which is actually, when you look at the whole time series, comes out to be the average, the same value as the average. So last year, on the female abundance, it was average. You will recall the others were down. This is the infamous table. We always show you table one in the governor's report, where we fill in each year as we go along So, again, we're at 147 for the spawning age females, but our total number of crabs is lower than the previous year. We are at 300 million for the total for last year versus where we had been in 2012, 765 million. And also our juveniles were down, which was the bulk of the loss last year, 111 million for juvenile crabs versus the 581 we saw in the preceding year. So the one upturn last year was the females, but then on our total abundances were down.
So the juveniles really caused some concern because it was the second lowest in the 24-year time series.
The two blanks you see on the table at the very bottom for 2013 is the Baywide commercial harvest. It is now still too preliminary to provide that information. And also the percentage of female crabs harvested. Last year, a lot of talk was about how we had such a low value last year in comparison of the actual amount of stock out there versus what the harvest was. Again, because I don't have a 2013 Baywide harvest available, no way of giving you right now what the exploitation rate is going to be, and guessing is not at any time a good thing to do. We'll have those updated toward the spring. Sometime along the same time we get the winter dredge survey results, the same results will be coming out. I can note, though, for Virginia, the preliminary estimates for Virginia coming out are for the total crabs in Virginia, we're talking about 17.6 million pounds. And for just the bay, we're talking about 15.6 million pounds, which is pretty equivalent to around the 2008 levels for what we saw then.
So Joe means the Virginia portion of the bay.
Right. And this is just Virginia information, not the other jurisdictions. The staff had worked up some information on the economic value. And what we saw for 2013 was interesting. It kind of played out a lot of the information anecdotally we received from the industry last year. So the very top graph is the value of blue crab harvest. This is based on reports we get through a voluntary system from our dealers. It's a monthly survey. Monthly, correct, right?
Yep.
Quarterly. Okay, thank you. That's why I looked for them. It's a quarterly survey that they do with various dealers to find out what is being paid on the market. So based on the information that's provided us from those, we saw that 2013, we had a higher, very high value come out for 2013, which kind of matched up some of the information we're seeing. So 2013 total value in the top, around $30 million worth in value, even though our harvest was down. On the bottom, you want to see basically what it did month to month. So in 2013, we saw values $4 to $5 million in dockside value ranging from April until August. And then the typical downward trend for the fall season as the fishery starts to tail off.
So these were all adjusted by staff for 2014 Consumer Price Index. So that means that the past years going back to 2008 were adjusted for the 2014, as were the other years.
The blue line on the graph, of course, is the regular hard pots, the crab pots, the red being the peeler pot, the smaller of the two fisheries. And you see peeler pot was up a little bit in places like 2012 over the time series. 2013 is still a higher value than the others.
Can you go back to that one, that slide, for a second, Jeff?
Okay.
So the bottom slide, that's the value sold per month that you're gathering on a quarterly basis.
Yeah, they're getting the data on a quarterly basis.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I just want to make sure.
Okay. Good.
Andy's up.
Any other questions?
No. Andy.
We also wanted to show you some of the effort data. So this one here shows the number of trips for the previous 6 years, 2008 through 2013. You've got your hard pots on the top and peeler pots on the bottom. So you can kind of see where 2013 fell in with that.
Is this weighted at all for a number of pots?
No.
No.
And then we also broke it down by month to see which months were the most active. So on the top, you have your hard pots, and bottom, the peeler pots, with the number of harvesters on the left, and then 3 years on each graph, the previous 3 years, and then broken down by month.
So the totals are off to the right there for the entire year. So you had about a 500 harvester drop in 2013 for the crab pot, and the peeler pot dropped, but was closer to 2011.
And you can also see the season extensions for 2012 and 2013 for the hard pot graph.
And the end number is just a data point. It's actually not, we didn't have 4,000 harvesters in the pot fishery. That's the total number of adding up all the different months they were reporting in and everything. That's where that number's coming from, not to throw anybody off.
Which one is that?
You look on the end numbers on the right that they provided. Those aren't, it's not that we had 4,000 potters out there.
If you had 400 each month for 10 months, that would give you the 4,000. It's not unique harvesters.
And we also broke it down by the number of trips per month. So again, we have pot on the top and peeler pot on the bottom, 3 years plotted on each graph. And this is number of trips by, so every harvester again who submitted a monthly report, we counted the trips for each of those.
You got a graph on numbers of harvesters per month?
That's what that one was.
Technically, that is. So for 2013, in April, we had a little over 400 harvesters in the crab pot fishery, whereas in 2012, it was closer to being above 450 harvesters. Well, higher than that, so you're off by about 50 harvesters just in April. And then as you go along the line, you can see 2013, the harvesters by month was lower until you get to about August, July and August. And then it kind of matches up with 2011, 2012, the number of harvesters by month.
After
that right. time period leading into November. Or 2011 had probably a few more November harvesters than the other 2 months, based on the reports.
Yeah, but the data that I've gotten last summer showed a significantly different number than that graph shown as far as harvesters in 11 and 12 versus the harvesters in 13.
In what way?
Say there were 600 harvesters in June and 12, there was only 450 or 4 something. I don't have the numbers with me, but it was significantly different. It was at least a 30% less in the amount of harvesters
in 2013?
In 13 versus 12.
Right, but at that time when you see the data, tie, everything was preliminary. We hadn't received all the reports at that point. So any data point we would have given you for June of last year during the summer is all preliminary. All reports would not have been in at that time. Anything they give you, I guarantee, had the word preliminary on it.
Every ghost grabber's trying to keep their licenses active.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a good time to tell you that what Joe said a few minutes ago about the harvest, it's a projection. So, you know, we do have ways of projecting. You're familiar that we've done that before. I think we've done that now for the fourth year because obviously you would hope all the harvest is in by now, but it's not. We have delinquent data. So that's always going to be the case, I guess, but it certainly has picked up quite a bit, not to put a plug in for mandatory reporting, but mandatory reporting is finally to the stage on compliance where it's up to the current year, 2013, and we don't have to look or up to the last year, 2013, whereas before we used to bring cases that had delinquent data much in the past. So things are improving. But there's still delinquent data.
Going by a active harvester, those lines aren't right.
What's that?
Going by what active harvesters will tell you, the people who are out there crabbing, there's no comparison to what you're showing us on that graph to what's really out there. So something needs to be figured out on how to make reporting more legitimate. Because
there's less harvesters out there?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's crazy. You can't even from July, mid-June to July, they're just about parallel to each other all the way down to 11, 12, and 13. That's crazy. That's ludicrous. You take any buyer will say that's wrong, and any crabber will say that's wrong. Now, what you're getting in black and white on paper or on your electronic reports is what you're going by. But what it really is, isn't that. I'll just let it go at that.
Could you go to the next slide, please?
Yeah, go to the next slide.
There.
Yeah, the worst thing about it all is the ones who are trying to make a living on this have to deal with that type of information and all these regulations and conservation things are being thrown at us on that type of activity, and that activity is wrong.
May I say two things? One, this is Ms. Haney's first meeting as chair. Typically, a committee directs their situation to the chair so the chair can recognize them. Let's not forget that. The second thing is, I'll address your points. We will make attempts. It's very difficult to do, to see how we can get better information. Obviously, we can't make everything right quickly. There can be ways that you can look at harvesters who have, and you've heard me say this before, you have harvesters in the same area, same pot amounts. You can look and do case studies, which I've done in the past, to see if there's any problems with reporting. You look for something that just is not exactly the same as the other harvesters, but way off. You look to see if harvesters themselves, if you follow them over time, whether they report inconsistently when there's no reason for them to report that way. So you can do that. It's just that it hasn't been instituted on a wholesale basis. In 2008, when was the first time that I heard of the committee talking about false reporting, I looked at 30 cases and followed those harvesters and was satisfied that there really wasn't anything unusual, but I didn't go beyond the 30. I mean, there were reports that were consistent in the same area with the same pot categories. I think we still need to do that, but you realize we're getting about 400,000 records, so we need a little input from someone who can program and do that, and we talk about that. We do talk about it. So, you know, in the meantime, just bear with us, if you would.
We're going out of business while we're bearing with you. I'm sorry, Ms. Chairman.
I'll just point out one more thing on the number of harvesters graph. For the fall months, even if somebody went out one day for that month, they're counted as number of harvesters. So maybe somebody who goes out, you know, the entire month versus just one day, all that's still reflected is just like one count.
Thank you. That's good.
You have to recognize this out loud. So problem. So, and that's why I ask that you do you go to the next plot, that's the real effort number of trips. And if you look, you're seeing the same thing basically. All the data for number of trips for hard pots land on top of each other after July. And I don't know, maybe you look at the data and try to look at the catch and see if maybe they're reporting that they're catching, that they're working their gear, but instead of working 100 pots, they're working 10, just so they can report the day, you know. I don't know, but I know that you guys have talked, and I know when I'm out in the water, I didn't last year see hardly, well, I saw a fraction of the crab pots that I did in previous years.
Mr. O'Reilly, I'm sorry.
I mean, like, VMRC, they ride by, and I get checked a whole bunch, and they write down the name of your boat and stuff. Isn't it coincidental that some people just never show up in the system? Or does that information never get checked or ran? Or
not following your question, Kim.
Like, the VMR, like the inspectors, when they come around in the boat, I mean, get your crabs cold or whatever, or come check your license or stuff like that. Or just ride by and I see them write something. I figure they're writing down the name of the boat. They obviously know you're actively working. You know what I mean? Like, some people, is there any kind of system where they run that against, like, all these active crabbers to see why, like, some people, you get a lot of hits, and then some people just never get checked because they're not there?
Law enforcement logs citations. They don't log every single instance for us to go through and see who they check throughout the entire day. Their log has to do with their actual citation.
Oh, I didn't know.
Who they've written, that's where that database provides this information.
Yeah, I was just wondering because, like, you know,
if
you've
written a lot of tickets, Ken, I guarantee we could track.
See, them. If I was doing wrong, trust me, I'm just saying, you know, it'd be whether you see them at your market, you see them at the dock, you see them in the river, even if they just check something. I mean, it looked like to me that'd be an easy way to cross-reference. I mean, hey, or, you know, if somebody shows up, you go in their area, they're not there. I mean, it's not that hard. I mean, the boats go fast, and, I mean, they see me enough. It'd give them, I mean, I just think something's got to be done because that's a big issue. I mean, people don't want to lose their permit and stuff, and it's use it or lose it is the attitude, and, I mean, I can't say I blame the people, but at the same time, I'm one of the people that's hurting.
Mr. Raleigh?
I just wanted to let everyone know. So we're here just to give you sort of summary data tonight. We haven't, as they say, drilled down for this presentation. We have in the past. If we did do that, we could tell you each of the pot categories, and then you could easily spot out of the 5 hard pot categories anomalies a little bit better on trips and things like that. So that's one comment. So please understand, we just wanted to provide some information to you tonight, bring you back to where we left off. We're waiting for another Baywide winter dredge survey result coming out probably in late April, maybe available by May 1. So we went through that. We're going through the nominal data for you. The other thing perhaps which is pertinent here is Maryland has a system where what they do is they go out and they, Versar, if you've heard of Versar in Maryland, they count the pots. They go along and they go in grids and they go through and they count pots. They get the amount of pots. Then they go to the boats and Maryland staff goes to the boats. They look at the catch. They get the catch rates. They spend time doing that throughout the season. That way they come up with a harvest estimate. And the harvest estimate can be fairly close to the reporting, but not always. As a matter of fact, Maryland's been using that approach because they found that their harvesters were inflating the reports starting in 2008. And it was mostly the smaller pot categories, the part-time folks who were saying, I fished all 5 days, even though they didn't, and sending it in, and it made a real mess. Lately, it's come a lot closer, but they still have that way of generating the harvest. We do not have the funds to do that. And as a matter of fact, if you think about it, here we are with a $30 million, which is really not enough from the commercial fishery, and who knows how much the recreational fishery, how much enjoyment that is in Virginia. And yet, we don't even have a program that goes out and sexes crabs, measures crabs. It's a little bit unbelievable. So, you know, the situation is we have a lot of fisheries in Virginia compared to Maryland, important fisheries. And it's just never occurred to the General Assembly, I guess, to supply us with the funding. So there could be ways to answer Ty again a second time, a better way to answer him. There could be ways that we could improve on harvest estimates, but it would take some funding and it would take some more staff. You know, we've got 28 people in fisheries management for artificial reef oyster replenishment, saltwater tournament, and the fisheries main folks. So you can probably see that you talk about dwindling resources, you're looking at some of them right here. So I just wanted to mention that. Thank you.
Do you have additional slides on?
So the last one is just, we used 2012 because the data is already finalized for it. Just shows you which pot categories were most active during that year. So you can see the pot categories, the number of eligible harvesters for each category. And the next column is any harvester who reported at least one day of harvest. The next one over from that is 100 days or greater. That's 56 there, including someone from the 205 category. And then the percentage of active 100 days or greater, which gives you a percentage for each category. So there's 48% eligible harvesters that are actually active over 100 days or greater in 2012.
Any questions from the committee?
No. Yes, I have a question. Why do you have a breakdown from one day to 100? Why don't you maybe put in another category of 50?
Well, I think the reason is when we went through the disaster relief proposal and we tried to figure out what full time might be, the 100 days was what was used in terms of the amount, looking at the amount that would be paid for buyback. So that's where the 100 days came from. It's not a magic number. We certainly have information from the past that look at intervals of 10 days. So we could do that as well. But for the purposes of tonight, one of the items is looking at combining crab pots or combining licenses. And you can see from this table that there's a big difference from who's eligible and who's at least active in a 100-day sense. And that's the main reason this table's here.
Any other public comment? No. Any other discussion from the committee?
Rob, if you can give me data that is stripped of identifying and just numbering the harvesters by number, I may be able to give you a hand processing it.
Call me.
Mr. Davis?
How many days is in the crab season that you can crab? Does anybody know? How many active days, like out of a six-day week, how many?
You can tell us, I think.
I don't know. Mine are pretty, I'm just saying active, is that even 50% of the days you're eligible to work?
No.
I don't know.
It's exactly
to start to look for full-time right off the get-go in my book. Full-time, that's somebody, you need to be out there for 6-7 months of the crab season would be more of a full-time crab pot.
Because 100 days is only 3 months.
Yes, please.
Okay.
Yeah, 100 days is only 3 months. When you take the Sundays off, it almost, I'm with Ken. That's not really full-time activity. You only work 3 months out of the year.
Mr. Yeah. Raleigh?
I will respond. Ken, it was just used as a statistic back when we did the buyback, the 100 days. We had to figure out, we lined up every crab harvester, and that looked like a break point, 100 days. There are very few in the scheme of things. If you have 833 active crabbers, there's not that many that are over 100, but there are some. Yeah, and as a matter of fact, what I remember back in 2008 when we went through this, that if you were going to look at the harvesters who had the most, the top 40, they could have taken up the entire buyback by themselves. But, of course, very few of those were interested because they were full-time crabbers. There could be different higher amounts that you could call full-time. But it becomes your call. It's your call versus someone else's call.
I understand. I'm just saying in the way things are going and into the future, I'm just saying we need to have a bracket where they really need to break that down and get a handle on that before
things down the road that could happen, because it's not right to treat, you know what I mean? Some people, if they were to ever go to quotas or something like that, it's not really right to be somebody that barely ever works is going to get the same thing as somebody that...
Right. Well, that's... May I?
Based on filling in reports that weren't even real. Yeah.
That's what happened in 2008, and some of you were there at VIMS thinking of ways that we could go forward, and that's when the wait list was established, and the criteria were that I think it was from 2004 to 2007, if you had 0 days of harvest, you were put on the wait list. But we looked at a lot of other scenarios at the same time, and there's nothing wrong with us. If you have a suggestion, we'll be happy to, Ken, to categorize things, but you have to tell us which years you want to look at, and, you know, then we can do it.
Well, I mean, even then, or just, like, going forward, because, I mean, it's not that many people, so, like, when you make a, it sounds like you're affecting a lot of people, but really the laws don't really, you know what I mean, that time of year, just by paper, but in all reality, it's not that many people out there, and you're making the regulations thinking it's all these people, and it really just, I mean, it puts you in a bind, kind of.
May I? Do you have a specific idea that you want us to look at? Or do you want us to take the 2011, 12, and 13? 2011 was a pretty good year. It was actually better than 2010 harvest-wise on paper. And we could go forward to 2013, and we could see what individuals have done in terms of the amount of days they craft. Is that something that you're looking for?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to see how many, you know, what's like a, how many people are really full-time.
Right.
Because.
Okay. Why don't we do that, and then next meeting we'll have that available for both the peeler pot fishery and the crab pot fishery. Is that okay?
Madam Chair.
Some more?
Do we actually have a regulation on the book that deals with false reporting?
I'm sorry, false reporting?
Yes.
Yeah, it's in Regulation 610. It's a Class 3 misdemeanor. I mean, that, you know. Joe's saying no?
I'm sorry, I was responding.
Oh. Make sure Joe's not saying no to me.
No, not to you.
Have we ever, has anyone ever been charged under that?
Oh, are you kidding?
Well, on the contrary, what's happened is there were folks who didn't report and ended up getting put back in the fishery under appeal. So it's quite different from what you're talking about. As a matter of fact, the 867 that used to be on the wait list, I think that's the number, that's probably down to about 230 because of appeals mainly and things like that.
Mr. Powers?
To reiterate, the penalty is not the Class 3 misdemeanor, which is a $50 fine or something like that. The penalty is they get hauled before the commission, and the commission has been taking people's licenses and ability to fish.
But we've never done that for...
For over-reporting?
We've never done it that way. All the cases have come before the commissioner for not reporting on time, missing several months, missing a couple of years, things like that.
We had one more comment from the public.
I'm Beverly Mudford, and I have one of those less than 85 crab pot licenses, and I just wanted to mention to the committee that I didn't crab in 2012 because I was asked not to. And I was one of those people that during the whole buyback scenario was asked to look at another fishery and went to oyster farming. And so I'm waiting for the crabs to come back, just to let you know. Because I was asked specifically not to crab because of the crab crisis that we were in. So it's not, I'm one of those active, not one day, you know, because of that. You know, is that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Do they know what I'm saying? Yeah, I'm not crabbing because I was asked not to crab because of the crab crisis.
Who
asked to crab, but there's no crabs.
Who asked you not to crab?
Well, I understood that in order, when we did the whole buyback thing and we had the oyster grants that were offered to people who agreed not to crab and to try to oyster. Maybe I was wrong about that, but that was what I heard was, would you try another fishery and help us with this issue? for a few years, and that's what we've done.
Any other questions?
Would you like that cleared up?
Yes, please.
Yes.
I think what happened was there were crab harvesters, so the buyback and the oyster cage and the spat on shell projects, they were all to help, to assist those who had been impacted by the crab disaster, the declaration by the National Marine Fisheries Service that there was a disaster in the fishery. There were no companion rules about not being able to crab. You know, that was not something that was part of any type of approach. So,
I understand that. It wasn't that we were, can I speak to that?
Sure.
It wasn't that we were told you have to do that. It was voluntary. You know, we understood that there was a crisis. We understood that we needed to be part of the solution. So, you know, we looked at other ways that we could work on the water. So it wasn't, I mean, I understand what you're saying. It wasn't that. It was an understanding that we had that we needed to look at another fishery to help the crab population come back.
But the buyback and the oyster farming.
That too, I don't know.
The buyback and the oyster farming were two unrelated issues.
Well, they were related.
But
the whole, there were six items as part of disaster relief. As far as programs went, two of them involved oysters. And this woman was obviously involved with one of those programs. So they were all related to help the crab industry and you know, but it did not prevent them from crabbing.
Any other discussion from the committee? Ready to move forward to the next item on the agenda? Discussion request to combine crab pot license categories.
I think we invited John Forrest to
you want to go over his letter?
Anyway. Yeah, you go over the letter.
First one. Well, actually, the Pelopal one would be the first one that's on your agenda.
Okay.
Yeah, we stopped just short of that. So just to be brief on that, on the packet that we sent out to the committee, John Forrest, some of you may know, he's a commercial harvester, and he is a Pelopotter, and he's pointing out in his letter to us that he can only get 1 to 2 salt crabs every 200 pots in a day. And he, as some would remember, back when the pot limits happened in 08, and then in 08 we had a 30% cut in pot numbers. So the peeler pots were also at that time a 300-pot license. Well, they took the 30% cut, took them down to 210. In 2009, the regular crab pots only ended up at a 15%. They went back up, but the peeler pots remained at the 30% at the 210. John is arguing in his letter that because they can only get 1 to 2 soft crabs in 200 pots, that they really need to get at least up to the 255, which is the current level for a regular crab pot, at that old, you know, the 255 crab pot, or higher. He feels this will help the peeler pot market, because they can put more product out there, and also he made, as his letter indicated, he thought it was better for the total fishery itself that they're able to do more peeler potting. It's a cleaner fishery, in his opinion. So that was from Mr. Forrest. So that's the first one.
Okay. Any questions, Mr. Farrington?
Had anybody else make the same requests or any other requests?
We'll send it to you.
Your what?
No, did not.
Okay. Can I make a comment? All right. The peeler potters took the 30% reduction just like the crab potters did. They didn't have to put new coal rings in. They didn't have to leave the sanctuary early. They didn't give up a whole lot except for 30%. I'm not against them getting their full rig back, 300, but the hard potters deserve it too. So, you know, if the peeler potters get it back, I understand, you know, I understand they're on a size limit. They can't catch but so legal size, only supposed to keep a legal size peeler, which they Some do, some don't. But they weren't cut back like the card potters were. So, you know, I'm not against what Mr. Poor, how he feels and how he wants to harvest. But I fished a lot of crab pots last summer and last fall. Didn't have but one crab in it. A lot of them had no crabs in it. You know, so he's not the only one feeling the bite of the situation we're in with the whole crab stock. So that's, you know, like I said, I don't feel that they need to be increased. They haven't really given up a whole lot. And if it comes down to it, he's probably fishing, or a lot of them are fishing more than their 210 anyway.
Mr. O'Reilly?
Well, I guess it's terrible to have been around a while, but the history on the peeler pot is we sent out a survey back in 1996, and what came back was that there really weren't that many who were fishing over 200 peeler pots. And if you recall, the limit was raised to 400 at one point and then scaled back down. That was part of the 21-point plan, scaled back down to 300. So, I mean, I just would think, since that's part of the record of the past, just how many pots really most peeler potters would need. If back then, when there was a, you know, that's when the peeler pot fishery was taking off. I mean, it was really taking off. It got up to 2.4 million pounds by 2004. So if you look back from 96 to 2004, it's almost like a, it's like that. So, I mean, I'm just wondering, I didn't understand the request because I'm wondering how many pots you really need. And I want to comment on the hard pot limit, and I know that that's been asked about before. One thing that concerns me about the hard pot limit, unless conditions are very good, unless the winter dredge survey is very good, results, and it's unfortunate, but we are all in this year-by-year approach with that, with those results. But the bushel limits weren't based on anything other than the amount of pots you have already. So that would be some kind of an adjustment to figure that in. Haven't really thought about it too much, but I know that that would be a difference. And I know expediency and efficiency are the main reason that you brought this up, Ty, because if you had the 300 pot, then you're off the water faster. And there's a bushel limit, so why not? But I think a complication might be the bushel limits weren't set at that 300 limit or at that 500 limit or at the 100 pot limit, no matter what the category is. So we would have to think about that a little bit and see as we go forward if this is a, if this is something the committee feels strongly about as we go further, then we'll have to look at it relative to the bushel limits.
Mr. Diggs, did you have a question?
No, I mean, if they get it back, I mean, we should too, but I don't see how that's going to make a difference for them that little bit, but I don't see how, that's not going to hurt. If they get it back, that's not going to hurt. I don't see how it would hurt. I mean, a lot of times they're not even baiting the peeler pots. They're fishing them, not baiting them, but not putting double crab in. They're just bare potting. I mean, that would help because when you get on a run of them, at least that week, he would catch more. I mean, I can understand his point, but I don't know. We should all get it back, all of the pot limits. I mean, your own basket limits and everything else, everybody, the crab potters, peeler potters, everybody should get whatever, at least what they're supposed to have back.
I had a question to Mr. Riley and staff. Basically, I wish Mr. Forrest was here because I like to get his opinion. The way I've peeler potted and crab pot, and myself, instead of getting maybe more pots back, I would feel our staff would feel towards just for the double run, which is normally, and you can see the chart from April to May. That's the, just the doubles. I'm not talking about crawlers. If we could get a time exemption, because the time, like if you're trying to move pods or you're on any kind of peelers, if you have a low running tide in the middle of the morning, it's almost impossible to fish your rig. It's almost impossible to move pots. It's impossible to keep your crabs in good quality. So I was wondering, instead of going with a pot increase, could we go with a time exemption just for the double run? That would be like from April to May, I'm not talking about the whole time. And I'm saying I think that would be better for the Peel Pot Andrea to as a stepping point to get that, you know, back on the right direction myself.
It'd be better for loss, too, keeping the crowd.
Yeah, it'd be better for loss. Exactly.
Better all around.
Yeah, because the main thing with your peelers is you want them to stay alive. If they get nipped, they don't shed right. You want to try to get them in the tanks as soon as you possibly can. So, I mean, years ago, sometimes we used to not even go out till 1 o'clock. We would be in by 4:30. We could fish our rig, and like you said, it was 300 pots then. Have them in the tanks by 6 o'clock. Where now, you go out in the morning, you're bumping around bottom, you're trying to move pots, you're tearing up your lower units, and then the crabs are out there for 8 hours, and you're leaving pots that are unfished. And, I mean, just for the double run, I mean, to myself, I think that would be a better way to go instead of looking for pot increase right at this point. And like I said, that wouldn't be for the whole year. And like Mr. Diggs said, it's only a small amount of time. I mean, most peeler runs on a double would only last from 7 to 10 days if you're lucky. That's only if you keep moving your rig. I mean, that's basically the biggest run. And, I mean, that's where it starts in the bay, goes to the seaside. So I think a time exemption just for the double run would be a lot better way to focus on right now.
The whole industry would benefit from it. I mean, especially on the market and not losing peelers, and it would make it a lot better.
And, I mean, I could just say I'm not asking for it for crawlings because, I mean, of course, hard crabbers would have a gripe because they would want more time, and I understand it. But just for that double run, plus another big gripe to that is in May. One of the biggest of the double run is the time scales back to 1 o'clock. So it's even less time you have on the water, you know, because they say it gets lighter sooner, but you still, if you got a low run of tide at 10, 11 o'clock, that 1 o'clock kills you. So, I mean, that's the way I would look to reapproach this as a time exemption just for the double run.
Mr. Well,
I guess the committee can discuss this and should discuss it more fully. There's not a lot of peeler potters is one consideration, but I think you might open things up. You said you crab potted and peeler potted in the past.
Yeah, sure.
So a time exemption might allow some more effort to come in for the crab pot fishery, perhaps, that you wouldn't want in April, especially before the spawn. I mean, that could happen on certain days if you have this exception or this exemption. That'd be the concern I would have.
Well, I'm sorry, that's not what was it again, Mr. Earl?
Well, if you have an exemption of your time limit.
Change of the time limit.
Yeah. What would it be exactly? What do you have in mind?
I mean, I prefer no time limit, I'll be honest, just for that small amount of time. Like I said, years ago, sometimes we wouldn't even go out till 1 o'clock, 1:30. I mean, if you had flood tides.
What would you do? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I mean, sir, if you had flood tides starting like 11, especially on the seaside, I mean, I don't know. Well, there's some people there that work the seaside, but they could testify to seaside. That's a real barrier over there to even get off the creeks or on. I mean, we peel a pot in some bottom on high water. It's only 5 foot. On low water, you have about two marshes of the pot already out, and you're trying to scoot up. You have your motor raised out just trying to get to them. So I'm saying if you're not exceeding your 210 pots, I mean, I think there should really be no time just for that small amount of time. And then if you have any kind of weather factor in, I mean, you know, if it comes northeast or something, that kills you another day or two. So, I mean, you have such a small window on just your double run that I think it should be no time exemption, that you should just be able to fish your rig when you're able to float and get back in and get your crabs out to market or get them in your tanks.
Mr. Riley.
Wow. So
I agree.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's fine. You're on the seaside. But what I'm trying to find out.
Well, I mean, even Bay Creek, if you're working shoal flats
right,
or stuff, if, I mean, you can't move pots
if
around.
If you don't have a time limit, okay, does that, and you're not in the seaside, does that open the door for doing both crab potting and peeler potting?
Well, what's the difference now? I mean, you still can. I mean, if you had a crab pot and a peeler pot license, you could go fish pots for half the day and go fish your pots the other half. I mean, there's no difference right now.
How much can you do compared to not having a time limit on peelers, though? That's the question.
Well, if you were going to do that, I mean, if you were going to work 8 hours and you come out at 1 o'clock, you would still have only but so much daylight to fish your peeler pots. Because, I mean, you're saying if you fish your hard crab pots, you have to be off the water at 1 o'clock regardless. That's your time, an hour to run pots out. So you're going to have to stop hard crab pot regardless. And then if it's a real good number, and you catch your basket limit by 10 o'clock, I mean, you may be off the water anytime. So, I mean, that's still a time frame. You know what I mean? If you're going to do both, you're only going to have so many hours in the day to do both. I'm just talking about the ones that just specifically peel a pot as an overall full-time industry.
Right.
It definitely benefits.
But others aren't going to probably feel that way, because if you're going out, you said you're going out some days at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, I mean, there's days we did use. I mean, we used to go
put this in the bay, and you know, opportunity knocks. I mean, is what I think. But, I mean, the committee needs to talk about this more than I need to, you know, find problems with it.
I mean, if we had to work on a time frame, I mean, I'm sure we could, but I'm just saying, I mean, the starting point would be none, but I mean, if we had to, you know, do a quarter five in the afternoon or whatever, I mean, something like that, because the problem is when the double run hits, you can't justify the tides. You know, they're an hour or two later every day, so that varies every week to every year on when it's going to be low running to high running. So, I mean, that's kind of hard to pinpoint the time. You know, if you say, okay, then let's take it from 12 to 5, but then if it's flood tide or high water in the morning, then that's going to mess you up. See what I'm saying? It's such a significant factor there of trying to pinpoint that small amount of peeler run that's why I think it should really be a time exemption.
Mr. Ryan?
Let me ask a resource question. So you heard me say that the peeler pot fishery really increased quite a bit, you know, up from less than 1 million pounds up to 2.4 million pounds. Then it came down. The last 5 years, and you saw the information out here, it's been flat. So is it a good thing to be able to do better in the peeler fishery when some of those graphs showed that the number of harvesters in 2013 were intermediate and the trips between 2011 and 12, yet the end result was not good. Granted, that's what we have from our reports, but the end result shows that it wasn't a very good peeler harvest. But you still have the effort out there. You still have the harvesters out there. So from a resource consideration, do you want to put more pressure on peelers?
Well, I mean, I don't know if you really put more pressure because the graph shows the best of it is only May and April, May. So, I mean, like Ken said, with crawlings for the rest of the year, of course, that's going to vary by big time. I mean, one or two crabs on a pot is a big catch for a crawling, but I'm just talking about for that small window of the double run is what I'm speaking about. Yeah. That's all I'm talking about. Like I said, I'm not looking to extend it out. I know you're going to have crab potters that's upset, and I don't think we need to put crab potters against peel potters or against drudgers. I think as a significant industry, we have to come to a happy medium where everybody can have a, you know, a good season and everybody can do fair. That's all. That's just the opinion I've come up with on that.
Chairwoman.
Mr. Powers.
So to just keep the discussion up here rather than to drag Rob into it, I think the real issue here is effort. And you have to do, if you're going to crank up the effort somewhere, effort is the ability to catch more crabs. And by having the 8-hour workday in, you lose the ability to catch crabs for whatever reason. And I think what Rob's trying to get at is if you increase the effort someplace, I mean, Rom used to say it's a bucket, and we have several valves on the bucket. We have one valve to put crabs in and several valves to take them out. And if we take out too many, the level's going to go down too fast.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, is you're not really.
So if you're going to take out peeler crabs by changing it so there's no time limit, even if you say you can move your 8 hours around on any given day but only work 8 hours, then you'll have better catch per unit effort. And with better catch per unit effort, you'll have more removals. So if we're trying to do a balanced approach where if we give from one place, we take from another, where are we going to take from to compensate for that?
Well, the one thing about that is, I mean, you would have better effort because, like Mr. Dake said, you would have a better quality crab. You have more accessible crab.
So that's fine. Do we take off 3 weeks at the end, at the beginning of the spring run? Do we cut the bushel limits back? Do we take hard crab? I mean, that's the kind of thing you have to look at.
What's to say there's not enough crabs out there to sustain it? They ain't even, the dredge survey is not done. Probably more, I mean, what's to say it's not enough out there that it wouldn't even affect anything?
Mr. Farrington, I think you had a question, too. That's skipped over.
Counting chickens where they hatched.
I mean, it's the same issue comes up with the crab potters, too, as far as what David's saying. And, you know, there's seaside hard crabbers who can't get away from the dock because the tide's down low. You know, in my opinion, a lot of people's opinion, the 8-hour time limit is hurts the industry.
You're on a bushel limit?
You know, you got crabbers who can't get to the crab pots, or peeler potters who can't get to their peeler pots, or they can't get away from the dock, or the tide's got the buoys under the water. You know, the 8-hour time limit affects all the fishery, all the pot fisheries anyway, one way or the other. if we're protecting the resource, then we just need to leave it alone right now. If we can make adjustments, you know, maybe you ought to change 8 hours or 12 hours.
Mr. Raleigh?
I don't know whether Ty finished, but I agree with what you said about the resource. So if we have a 2010 again, you know, 2010 was the only time that the winter dredge survey came back with above 215 million age one female crabs. And the juveniles were okay too. So if we can get in that mode, which we still say that the resource is not recovered, I mean, you know that. I mean, it takes more than 1 year, like 2010. You have to have some consecutive successes like that. Very hard to do. No doubt about it. It's very hard to do. I know it's hard to do, Ty. It almost happened 2 years in a row except for the freeze in Maryland in 2011. So it's a target that is attainable. But the 2008 management plan, which is more important, is still present. And so in order to – that request is a pretty heavy request.
Well, the thing – I mean, I buy crabs, so of course I want as many crabs as I can get. But I'm saying – you have an 8 month period to crab hot, or you only have a small 7-day to 8-day window for double run. That's the difference I'm saying on the time difference. That's the only thing. I mean, I'm with Ken Diggs on that too. I mean, it should really be no time limit if we have bushel limits in place now. I mean, you know, when you get your limits. Yeah, and pot limits. I mean, it should really, the time should be exempt on all the categories to be officially. But I mean, that's a real big request. I'm just saying, for such a small window of time, for the double run versus 8 months of crab pot, there's a big difference there. That's all I'm saying, but I'm like Mr. Diggs said. I mean, if we do a bushel and pot limit, in fact, the time limit should be varied either way, because I mean it's kind of ridiculous that you got to only be able to work 8 hours if you can only catch a certain amount of bushel to begin with. But I'm not going that far on a limb. I'm just talking about the double run.
And I mean, not just that, like from a sensibility standpoint, is it the oysters? It's this great big deal about getting your product to the dock and all that stuff. Well, with the crabs in the summertime, like on 4th of July and stuff, it's stupid. You got to wait. I mean, people are trying to get the crabs to market and stuff, and you're sitting around at the dock waiting when you could get them at 8, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock in the morning and be gone. You know what I mean? And stuff, a lot of times, it'll benefit the whole industry. I mean, it's silly. I mean, that puts you in it's kind of a bind. I mean, certain situations, a lot of reasons why you should be able to leave the dock earlier, between the buyer, the environment. I mean, it should. Something does need to be done with that, because as much, I mean, something's got to be done.
You're talking on the front end instead of the back end.
Oh, I'm talking on all ends. I mean, still, I mean, it would help industry on the other end, because, I mean, the buyers and stuff, that's what rules the industry. I mean, if they got a better product to get to market and stuff like that, I mean, there's plenty of enforcement. I mean, they got plenty of boats and stuff that go 100 miles an hour. They can get, I mean, it would be better for the industry to work and do what you need to do, because it would open, I mean, you're in a box, I mean, it's just bad, and it can get in, I mean, like you said, that's, you go there and you can't even get to your pots for a whole day, and you ain't got the 7 days to begin with.
Mr. Moore, do you have a reply?
Yeah, well, just two things. One, Rob, I think we actually were above the target back in 91 as well, so not just 1 year's two. But I don't get to correct you very often.
Well, there was no target.
That's true. There was no target then, but we were above what's the current target now. I think we've gotten a bit down in the weeds at this point. I think based on the things we heard last year about some concerns about mortality in the peeler pot fishery, you know, hopefully a much better winter dredge survey this year upcoming in 2 months than we had in the previous years. You know, I think we should be looking at all of those in a whole when we get those numbers and see what things we may be able to tweak or not be able to tweak. And at this point, I think we're going down a road that's we could discuss all night and we can't come to agreement on, because we don't have the data to say, can we change anything at this point? So I would like for us maybe to move on and have this discussion again when we have a little firmer.
I agree with that. I just wanted to throw it out there just to kind of get the ball rolling on.
Yeah, and I think it's been a good discussion to have that we might want to change this, but I don't think we're going to get anywhere on it tonight just because we don't have enough information to make an informed decision.
Thank you, Mr. Powell.
I do have a question to the members of the committee that peeler pot or have. My thought was, or understanding was, that the way peeler potters work is you catch the peeler crabs, you bring them to the dock, you put them in a tank, and people tend the tank and grab the soft crabs out immediately.
And it seems that Mr. Forrest does his where he will leave the crabs in the peeler pots overnight and then come in expecting soft crabs in the morning. I mean, that's what his last paragraph describes it as, and or paragraph before the last. And I'm wondering, is he behind the times with the approach to do the fishery? Because he says he gets one soft crab for 200 pots, and that seems like a pretty inefficient way to work.
You must have really good market.
Yeah, I mean, am I missing something?
I agree.
Yeah, I wish Mr. Forrest was here to explain it.
Yeah.
No, you're not missing anything. It's two soft crabs out of 200 pounds.
Yeah, but he says that, you know, and he's talking about if they're left to shed, the ones that I have left to shed in the pot overnight are either too hard or there's just shed into something that ate it. Well, every time I go looking for somebody who's got, when I want to buy peeler pot crabs for bait or buy soft crabs, I go to places and they got shedding tanks. I mean, there's one at Harrell's and one at Sheffield's that I've visited on a regular basis. And I'm sure they're all over in other places, too. But. So, I mean, to that end, I'm not sure just if that's a good basis for a request to increase the number of peeler pots.
Yes, sir.
My name is John Boudiette. I've been crabbing up in the Nansen River for about 30 years. Other than you four gentlemen over there, could the rest of you exactly tell me why we had such a lousy crab here this last year? I know, and I'm sure you four guys know exactly too. And it goes to addressing this guy's issue of he's not catching any peelers, or he pulls them out and something's eating them.
Well, actually, he said he's not catching any soft crabs because something eats them because he leaves them in the shed overnight. And there are mortality issues with crabs.
Everything out there in the river eats crabs. Every fish, you know, eels, everything. And about a year ago, I was at a funeral in Connecticut and talked with a second or third removed cousin. He's down in Lynn Haven. And he said he caught red drum all last winter, November, December, January. The water was so warm, the drum didn't leave. This summer, I was catching red drum in my crab pots in June and July, and that's never happened. There's so doggone many of them out there, they're a nuisance. And that's what's killing the crabs. And when I pull them up and cut out their bellies, two, three-inch hard crabs in them, as well as little crabs and all, everything else, little small fish and all. And the problem with the red drum is you can't keep three. You're only allowed three in possession. And I had a discussion with Joe Grist in October about this, and he said that it's being covered by some Atlantic Fisheries Industry or Association or something, and they were going to meet in January 14 to discuss the red drum situation and make a decision in January 15. But 6 years ago, when I put a 50-yard net out, I caught 54, 56 red drum. You're only allowed three in possession. You got to throw the rest back, and they're done. If something could be done about that, get rid of the damn red drum that's a nuisance. You know, I mean, that's a big problem out there. I caught one with a tag. I sent the tag in. They gave me this halfback. They said it was tagged in August of 2012. 11 inches long and weighed 2 pounds. When I got it 14 months later, it was 22 inches long and 4 pounds. If I throw the thing back, he'd have been over 26 inches this next year, and I can't keep it. So what's happening is you're allowing the red drum to multiply in astronomic numbers, and they're eating everything out there, everything. That's where the crabs went this year. Another reason was we had so much rain. I didn't catch but two jellyfish in my crab box, and I got like 200 pots out there in the Nansen River all summer long. And usually by June, I've got six to a dozen in my every crab box. Sometimes I got so many, it takes me minutes just to roll the things out. So maybe we had such fresh water. Maybe it's just, quote, global warming of last year. Thank God we've had some good cold weather that have thrown these drum right out. to the ocean. And Mr. Grist said, don't expect any changes because it's the Carolina state fish and they're lobbying to prevent any red drum harvesting whatsoever.
I think Mr. Grist can address your question.
I'm just waiting for you to get
done. I mean, this is ridiculous. You know, we're all sitting here frustrated because we can't catch crabs. Our time is we have to go out at a certain time. Like, we, you know, this is a business where you don't punch a time card and go to work and get paid.
What we call
I mean, it's ridiculous. It's all based on the tides and the winds. I hardly did any crabbing last April and March because for darn near 6 weeks straight we get northeast winds blowing right out over the Hampton Roads Bay Bridge Tunnel and all right down into here where I was crabbing down in the Hampton Bay. And when you're out there in 2 and 3 foot waves, you can't hardly pull pots. So to go catch peelers, we're in the shallows. If you get out there on a southwest wind, it's like flushing a toilet in the Nansen River. Out goes the water another foot. And you can't get to your crab pots. You know, you get in, you're chewing the mud up, you're tearing up your lower unit, your prop, your propellers, your impellers in your water pump. You know, if we could work maybe 8 hours, I understand everybody wants us 8 hours a day and that's all great. Well, maybe it should be based on time, on tide. You know, 4 hours before high tide, 4 hours after, so it moves a little. But like these gentlemen said over there, sometimes I can't get my boat out and I've got a Carolina skiff. It's ridiculous. And until something's done about letting us get rid of these drum, I throw 20 or 30 a day back. And when you pull them out of that gill net, you strip the slime off them, that leaves them susceptible for any disease that's out there. You got to stick your thumb in their mouth, fingers in gill, you pull the things out, you ruin their gills, they're dead. You know, I'm throwing back 1,300 pounds of drum a week that I could be making $1,000 a week to pay my bills, but I can't. I'm only allowed possession of 3. Now, I come into the dock with 4, I'm a criminal. But damn it, I could probably go down and collect welfare and food stamps, and that's legal, isn't it? I want to work, but this system is being put against us so that we can't work.
Mr. Griss, can you reply?
I can address some of it.
Okay.
I mean, it's frustrating to everybody.
So, a couple simple issues, one of which will come before the commission tomorrow. Yes, Red Drum, current updated stock assessment, which is a benchmark, which is where the management is derived from, will not occur. The next one will happen next year or so, probably by 2016. That's when we'll probably hopefully see some more expansive management measures to allow us to maybe do a little more with the fishery. Hopefully. In the meantime, we have spent the last 3 months working with ASMSC after a request to FMAC to at least get us to the maximum possession limit allowed, which is 5 instead of the 3, which will, you know, it's not a big jump, but it's a jump. And to just change the slot limit enough to allow that. This is all under what's known as conservation equivalency, which is allowed an amendment to its fishery management plan for the coastwide stock. We've run this through ASMSC's technical committee. We've run it through their board. They have all approved this unanimously that we have the ability, if the commission chooses, to change the commercial red drum rules to go to a slot of instead of 18 to 26 inches, 18 to 25, but to change the possession limit to 3 to 5 fish. It is something that is allowable, and they have endorsed the idea.
But that was just for the commercial fishery.
And that's what I said. So this will be introduced to the commission tomorrow for a public hearing on March 25th to at least make that change, which is the only change allowed in the amendment, until we get the next benchmark stock assessment and then the next set of management measures that come in behind that. But that is a small thing, but it's something, if it gets passed by the commission. Now, of course, Red Drum have been part of this whole cold stun event as well this winter, and there will be those who will have some heartburn over any idea of allowing extra fish for the commercial fishery, even though we are dropping the slot limit, even though it is allowed under conservation equivalency, even though it's been endorsed by a couple
of the SMSC committees and boards. So that is an issue that will come before the commission in March. Might rear its head a little bit tomorrow, but definitely for the March hearing if the commission allows for the hearing. The only response I have.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, question. When was the last doc assessment on the drum?
2009.
Why has it been so long since we had another one?
Usually benchmark stock assessments on the schedule during 5 to 7 years. You look at the number of species they have to do stock assessments on up and down the coast and number of scientists to do that work. It's usually a 5-year gap on those assessments.
Madam Chair.
Hey.
There was a turn of the crank assessment in between those two, though, right?
No.
There was no turn? No?
No.
The last one
was the 2009 benchmark assessment.
Okay.
They don't do a turn to crank update on that particular one.
Species, okay.
Okay. First off, it's conservation equivalency, and that's we're not in the FMAC. That was last week, so I'm not going to talk about that too much. I will say that crabs are an important part of the food chain. There's a reason fish will eat the crabs. And if you look at your low years on that chart, I look at the low years and I see 1992 and I think, yeah, that was a 1989 striped bass young of the year coming up through the 2-3-year-old fish. Or was 89 or 90? There was a really big young of the year. 89. Coming up through there and eating baby crabs. 1998, that was that 1995 striped bass coming through, eating the baby crabs. 2001 and 2004, I seem to remember we had a really good run of croaker in those years, eating the baby crabs. And this year, red drum is part of the deal of eating the baby crabs. It's an important part of the ecosystem that the commission has a responsibility to manage. It's not just one fishery here, one fishery there. And it's difficult. And so, do I think that we should be, every time something comes up in population of fish species that happens to eat crabs, we should be doing our best to just knock them all down and capture and kill them all? No. It's just a thing. You know, the watermen always say that all these fish and all these crabs and everything go in cycles. Well, when you get a cycle that's up, they're going to eat something. And right now, bay anchovies are down. People can debate it, but a lot of people think menhaden are down in the bay. Crabs get eaten by red drum. It just is. I don't think it's right to say we should just try to catch them because they're up. We did have this cold shot kill this year. Now, I'll tell you, there aren't going to be many speckled trout eating crabs next this coming year, and they love peeler crabs or soft crabs. So,
Mr. Diggs?
I was going to wait till new business, but I just have a question. How many red drum did they release last year in that little catch-and-release system? How many were called in, reported? So we know, do y'all have any idea, 3 million or something? Was that right?
2 years ago in 2012, the MRIP report was 2 years ago. The releases from MRIP was 2.5 million. That was in 2012. Last year, top of my head, it wasn't even over a million. It was in the hundreds of thousands.
700-some thousand.
How many fish were caught? Really? I'm talking about the game.
Fish had moved into the takeable slot for harvest last year. We have a large year class coming up, 11-12, that's moved its way into the fishery. As it moves out of the fishery, this is one of the unique things about red drum. As it moves out of the fishery, it literally moves out. Away, and all of a sudden we don't see them for a little while. You rarely get catches of the 30-inch ones, and they come back later as the bull reds, and you get that large group hovering around the bay, the mouth of the bay, from about May to August, September, of the bull reds, and those are the ones that are really more in the 40 and above. But there is a group slot area in there that they're going to move into, this large year class, where they're going to migrate on, and we don't see those fish. So they're going to migrate through this whole system, and then they're going to go off to what they do for that part of their life.
All right. Well, let's just say, how many do you think it is? If there's 3 million of them in the bay, maybe? Or is there probably a lot more?
I mean, I'm just saying, of any kind of fish. I'm just saying, if there's 3 million predators for crabs in the Chesapeake Bay, do you think it's that many between all the fish in the Chesapeake Bay? If there's 3 million things out there eating, not including all the crabbers, if they eat 5 a day, which I've seen people cut fish open with 5, 6, 7 crabs in them, and if they eat 5 a day, 3 million predators out there, that's 15 million crabs a day. In 10 days, there wouldn't even be no crabs left.
Yeah, so there's a fallacy in the whole argument, isn't there?
I mean, that's the only thing I'm saying. I'm not trying to dispute. I'm just saying I think there's at least 3 million things out there that feed on baby crabs, or in probably crabs this size. Somewhere, there's something in the woodpile somewhere is all I'm saying, because I don't know if I'm missing. This is the place can somebody shed some light, or is that just crazy?
Mr. Rowling?
No light will be shed. But this information that Tom gave you, the reason I put this table up here again is obviously there are different predators at different times or in different abundance at different times. Otherwise, all this information on juvenile production and everything else wouldn't be so variable. So up until Red Drum, striped bass was the rallying cry. So, I mean, species do coexist. Believe it or not, back when striped bass, before the current time period, but back in the 1960 to 72 period, was the high point of striped bass that ASMSC used to consider it restored in 1995. Crabs did nicely in about 8 of those 12 years. They coexisted in high abundance.
Mr. Bell?
So it's all about predators and prey.
They don't got no grass hide in them more.
Well, I just have a quick comment to Tom and to Mr. Riley. If that is the case, of course, there's been an influx of bass, influx of drum and stuff of this nature. And the question I have is, how come the waterman always has to take the brunt of it with all these regulations? I mean, if there is a proven cycle that fish is up, crabs is up, but the waterman is always one that has to get new regulations with call rings, pot limits, time limits, sanctuaries, all this stuff. So on an uptick or a downtick, we are the ones that's always facing the brunt of it. I mean, you know, if it's water pollution or fish or whatever, the crabber in the crab industry is always taking a cut, always getting a slap on the wrist about it. So I'm just wondering, if there is an uptick or a downtick, how can we have to be faced with so many regulations without giving time a year or so to go by to see if things go up or go down, just like if the fishing population goes up or down. Before a crab population even makes a remote rebound, we get slammed with more regulations. So I'm just asking, how come we're always the brunt of the bad category here?
Well, the answer is easy, because we do single species management still. We've been talking about ecosystem-based management since 1998, and we're still doing single species management. Crabs are obviously a very important species in Virginia, and the regulations did come out. In 2008, they started to be pretty serious. I think before 2008, some of the regulations, you wouldn't call that serious. But now, regulations do make an impact because of single species management.
But other than the 15% give back on the pots, I haven't seen one regulation been denied. I mean, everything, they haven't took one off the books, except for when they cut to 30 and then went back to 15. We haven't had anything taken away. We've had more call rings and everything.
Sanctuary.
Mr. Riley?
We had a regulatory review committee meeting in 2007. Dr. Lipschitz was part of that committee. And the finding of that committee was that there couldn't be a pinpoint of any particular regulation that really could be set aside. The finding was that the regulations together did, these are not my words, stave off further declines in the crab resource, the package of regulations that we had at that point. And I don't think that these were very strong regulations going up to 2007. Some were just, you know, sort of courtesy regulations, like have an 8-foot dredge. What kind of regulation was that? So, you know, the time of day was released about 2000, I think, when we started the time of day. We used to have Wednesdays you couldn't set your pots. Everyone remembers that, don't you? So, you know, it's a long conversation, but what I do agree with you is the regulations need to be looked at, and that's why we did that in 2007, but that's 7 years ago.
Mr. Moore, did you have...
I'll just say we also need to remember that crabs are cannibalistic little suckers as well. So it's just not fish eating them and birds and everything else. I think the other part is, you know, we talk a lot about what else is being done, and I've spent a whole lot of time this last couple of months walking around the General Assembly in support of new stormwater regs in Virginia. And there are a whole lot of people that are upset about those, a whole lot of municipalities that are upset about those. But I think they are one of the things that are key to improving the grass habitat in the bay, which will give these crabs someplace to hide, hopefully in the coming years, and will protect them from some of the predators they have now, including other crabs.
Mr. Powers?
And I was going to say, talk to the builder who has to do stormwater management. Talk to the farmer who has to do fencing near the streams in Henrico County, because it's the Chesapeake Bay watershed. And talk to the cities and counties that are all grumpy. I know Pocosin's really grumpy about TMDL management, the new things they're going to have to spend $1 million on. Our budget's only $22 million. So, I mean, there's a lot going on. The other concern I have as far as just restoration is global warming. And I know that that's part of the problem with eelgrass in the lower bay is the hot water kills in August. You know, when we get real hot, dry weather with no northeast winds. And, Madam Commissioner, when it comes your turn to sit at this table, one of the things I think the commission really needs to be looking at is some type of, call it invasive for lack of a better, because that's what it's always called, some type of other species that we can move up here and start planting and cultivating to get a replacement for eelgrass to have these crabs have someplace to be because to counter global warming. It may not need it this year, but within 20 years, you're going to probably need it.
Mr. O'Reilly?
Just went to the Mid-Atlantic Council recently, and there was a series of presentations on climate change and the effect on fisheries. And March 19th to 21, there will be a workshop on climate change and its effect on fisheries. And some of the ideas that are coming forward really do bear on all of us. And so I will be happy to let everyone know what the outcomes of that workshop are, because you've got some of the top folks working on that issue, and it's not just a situation that they think is a passing situation at all. It's something that's here. So I think that'll be interesting to the Crab Committee. I think that'll be interesting to the Finfish Committee.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion, or are we ready to move on to the next item on the agenda?
What did we ever talk about? Oh, were we on the crab pot thing there, or the peeler pot?
Crab pot's next.
We're still on the peeler pot thing there?
Okay.
Done with that now.
All right. Moving on, next item on the agenda, discussion request to combine crab pot license categories.
And it's as simple as what we provided you, Mr. Mark Bender, who is a commercial harvester. He has a crab license for up to 85 pots. He has relatives who also have crab license up to 85 pots. He would like the ability to combine those licenses to get them up to at least 170 pots and get to the higher bushel limit at that level. He let us know that his father is unable to work every day and they just have to use an agent. He'd rather just have both pots himself and do all the work himself instead of having to use an agent. It's as simple as it gets. Let's take the lower categories and combine them, make them bigger.
Discussion from the committee? Mr. Farrington?
Why would it be justifiable to let the smaller categories combine and not the larger? You know, it's, if he wants a bigger license, go buy one. They're for sale.
I remember those comments at this table before.
You know, and if it, I understand where he's coming from to a little extreme, but, you know, it's all about effort and conservation right now. Right now, it's not the time. Just like it wasn't the time to open dredging.
Mr. Moore?
I guess that's kind of my question for you guys. I mean, are licenses coming up for sale at least a semi-regular basis that we can combine?
I mean, you could combine them because nobody wants them. I mean, more people would have them. It should be to where you could just get as many as you want in your name because in all reality, crab pots are not free. Not between people. If you had a license, you can't do but so much in a day. You're already on all these other limits. You should be able, but there shouldn't be a limit. You shouldn't just allow, I mean, like I said, now probably ain't the time, but it would be a lot easier if people could just get them. And then, but see, that's why this whole thing, people want to combine, but it's no point. If you're not going to let everybody do it, you can't just let one person do it. That's not, you know what I mean? So
if there was a framework where you could combine as long as you didn't go over 425, I mean, what would be preferable to the industry? Like letting people combine up to 425 or letting them purchase larger licenses on the open market?
If you're going to do something like that, let people get – just let them get however many they want. Like I said, you can't do but so much. You can't hire people to fish your pots. It's not like having 1,000 acres of oyster ground where you can hire every Joe Blow to go work this, that, and the other. You have to be on the boat working the pots. So, you know what I'm saying? And you only have a certain amount of time. So if you have, I mean, and the licenses are already active. So it's not going to hurt. But if you're going to let people get all those licenses like that, then you would really know who's active and stuff because people aren't going to buy them just to have them like they do now. They have them now just because they're afraid that the state is going to buy them back again and get a bunch of money for them.
Mr. Griss, did you have a comment?
Just to add to your discussion only, just so you're aware, we are getting situations now a little bit more frequently where individuals are coming in together who both have crab pot licenses. And for those who want to do more and have larger license, there's those who want to do less. They're doing transfer swaps. So basically both doing transfers to each other at the same time, swapping out. So, you know, one wants to get more pots, do more. He finds someone who wants to do less, and they just come in, they do a swap with us on the license. So they have that ability to go ahead and get the larger limit and do what they need to do, and the other guy can do more of a part-time job.
Mr. Raleigh?
Yeah, just to remind you, there are 100 transfers allowed per year for any crab or peeler pot licensees, so it's up to 100 unless you're a family member, and that doesn't count towards the 100. This committee talked quite a bit about this issue back in 2005 and didn't really reach a consensus, I guess, at that time. But in that case and also in your case from before, one of the big drawbacks is turning inactive pots into active pots. And so both in 2005, and I know you discussed it as well, you're looking for some way that if this could happen, that it was active to active, that someone getting out to give that extra 100 pot license or 85 pot license was active. So this would take some very careful considerations, obviously. What we have, you can't see it, and okay. It's up there?
I mean, I can put it up there.
Oh, you can?
Yeah.
Okay. We do have it then. Okay, there we go. So this is what was just brought up a few minutes ago. Once you start combining categories, pretty soon you run out of room with the way things are now. And, you know, you would, you know, how do you get up to the category that you would want to by combining? So it's okay for the small categories, but you can see that once you get up to the larger categories, you're running in the negative in terms of having to give up pots to satisfy a category. And unfortunately, we do have those licensed pot categories. So, you know, that's one situation there.
We have one comment from the public, and then I'll come back.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, I bought a pot license last year, so he can do the same thing I did. You know what I mean? He can buy his own. If he's that interested in getting into fishery and upping his license, all he's got to do is buy one, sell his. You know what I mean?
Mr. Chairman.
I was just curious, Mr. Riley. Would it be any way we could go to, like, a new system? I mean, I know this is a little far-fetched, but to make this easier and to make more full-time watermen to go to, like, a, you know, like a you know, maybe a category where it's a certain fee, and if you up the fee and you know, come with a number, like say it's a 425 number, and then you up the fee, the ones that up the fee that go in it is going to be the full-time waterman. You're going to eliminate a lot of false reporting and a lot of agents and stuff like this. Like, you know, say we went with a 425 category and say it was like $500 or $700. I mean, I know I gladly pay it. I'm sure Ty, Ken, and anybody would pay it. And then that would eliminate all this trying to sell black market license and trying to up all this stuff and all this bushel limit and everything like that. I mean, we could stay with a universal bushel limit, but just go with one, you know, one category there with a higher price. And then only full-time watermen are going to approach that. I mean, is that any possibility for the future? Or?
Probably not. But, I mean, when you think about it, about our whole situation, in 1992, when the General Assembly looked at the commercial fisherman registration license and that got established, there were roundtable meetings. And part of those discussions were to make a very high entrance fee of $1,000. To help on the limited entry. It ended up at 150. At the same time, a lot of those in industry who were involved in those roundtable discussions will tell you that they expected to be able to move from fishery to fishery if they set a high price to get in. Now, you know what happened with $150 the first 2 years that was in place, the registration license, you still had recreational folks in there until there was a regulation for recreational species, but you still have a lot of what you would call part-time. Another problem with what you're presenting is I know you can think of what a full-time fisherman is, and I think if we lined everyone up, they could give us maybe somewhat similar for this committee, but outside this committee, it falls apart. The commission has struggled in the past with what a full-time fisherman is, especially with striped bass and limited entry. And, you know, a lot of heartburn was spent on that fishery in 1996, trying to find out who was full-time and who was part-time with income requirements. So full-time is not as easy as Ken Diggs said, why 100 days? That's not really full-time. But if you ask someone else, who does some gill netting and does something else, they'd say 100 days is a lot for crabs because they've got other things to do.
Well, I'll retract that full time, and I mean if it was a universal pot.
I don't think money's the issue there. I think it's all about effort still. I think, you know, you can see that we only have 833 crabbers, hard pot crabbers, out of 1,200 and some who are eligible. We need to get to the day where we have the 833, maybe. There's always that threat looming over the fishery, whether they really are just waiting to be bought back or whatever they're doing, or whether they're false reporting. I agree we need to get more down to the full-time end of things in a lot of our fisheries because I think we'd have more reliable data that way. So, no, I guess that's a long answer to say no.
Mr. Cox, I believe you were waiting.
Yes. First of all, in 1992, I've been here setting this table since then, so I remember all that. I hear this over since 92, over and over and over and over and over and over. Same thing, over and over and over. Getting back to this issue with Bender, I know him personally, know his dad. We might have to take consideration at some point in time where we all know Waterman getting older. His dad's disabled. So we need to take that in consideration. At some point in time, a man who's disabled, who's got a small license, he's got a son that wants to take him. We've never discussed that when a man's disability. He's not able to fish him. So as a dad myself, I'd like to, if I get disabled, I'd like to be able to take, my son's got a license, I got a license, and give him to him, as long as it doesn't exceed the big number. I mean, we've never talked about a man being disabled. That does happen. You know, and this man's disabled, and he can't fish his pots, and he wants to give them to his son. Not doing that is wrong. That's all I got to say.
So there's two issues here, I think. I agree with what you're saying, that when there are disabilities involved,
it's within a family, that that's something that the commission and this committee should consider. I also think that this fishery is still overcapitalized in general, with latent effort and active effort. I think that the active effort comes and goes depending on good years. Last year we had a bad year, and contrary to what the graphs say, I believe that the effort was down last year because of that. But when we have a good year, people are going to come back into the fishery. I think that if the commission were to consider some type of combining gears issue, they need to consider it with the concept of you have to get two licenses. So if you want to go from 85 plus 127 to get to 170, you got to take two 85s plus a 127 to get to 170, and that second 85 disappears from the fishery, from the permits. That if you're going to do something to allow more people in, it has to be active people first. I mean, active licenses that you're getting out of the fishery, and when you're combining them, and the actual total number of permitted pots goes down. I think the only way we're going to get this fishery in hand is to do that. And as far as pots, we've talked about this in years gone by. I know Mr. Cox will remember this one. The answer is for limiting the number of pots out there and keeping track of it is a pot tagging system, and that's something that the watermen would have to pay for, because we've asked the legislature on a number of occasions to pay for it, or the commission has, and it's never gotten anywhere. So that's something where you pay 25, 50 cents a tag for your pots as part of your license fee. You pay, you know, the additional on top of that. And if you want, if you've got a 400 pot license and you're only using 200, you only buy 200 tags. But I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon either.
Mr. Diggs?
I don't know. No point in talking about it. I mean, I don't see it happening. But so if it does, I mean, we'll address it. But I mean, if you're going to let one do it, I'm just saying, because that man and his dad might have worked for that, but if me and my dad worked in the boat with 425 pots and he gets disabled, why should I have to adjust my life? You know what I mean? If you're going to let people combine pots, but if, like Tom was saying, if you are going to let people combine them, a conservation tax, I mean, I understand what he's saying, like take some to get some, but I mean, like you said, then that effort's gone forever. But all that would have to be looked into, and I don't know. I don't see any of it happening, so I don't guess it really matters much.
Mr. Farrington?
I mean, I agree with what Ken's saying and Tom's saying. It's all about trying to reduce the effort. If you were to combine licenses, they'd have to give up so much of one license, 15% of it or whatever, or go down to the category that would be the next lower level with the two added up to be, just to create conservation and do away with that extra effort. So like the 285 would be 170, but he'd only get a 150 and give up the 2 to 20 pots to create effort reduction. But it also, we ought to be in the same category as Maryland and be able to fish up to 900 pots. So somebody could take two 500 pot licenses and put them together, reduce, take out the 15% or whatever to create conservation and get those extra pots out of the water. It wouldn't add up to 900 pots, but if you bought another 100 pot license, he would get closer to 900. You could stack them up to a certain number, but you'd always have to give up 15% or 20% of whatever you're stacking to reduce that effort and take those pots out of the water. I mean, Ken, when you got Little Buddy's license.
Well, I had a 300 pot license originally. I bought 500. I tried calling down there and seeing if I could buy a combine and.
And give up 100 pots.
Yeah, but they said it wasn't possible. So,
right.
I mean,
there's ways to work it.
There's ways to do it.
To create conservation, but it needs to be figured out.
But if you're going to do that, I mean, a man in Virginia is just as good as a man in Maryland. I reckon I can fish 900 if he can.
Well, I mean, that's the way it should be. You know, if you can stack them, buy them and stack them, or family transfer them, let it go. Give it a total number. Maryland can do it up to 900. Why can't Virginia?
Mr. Raleigh.
Just so we talk about Maryland, so that's each add-on is 300 pots that they start out with. They have their basic, then they go to their what they call the TFL, and by the time they get to 900, then there's three people on board. That's the way that works.
Well, believe me, I've got a 200 pot license or 300 pot license, which is 255, and I got three people on my boat. Yep. Got to have one to shake and bait and one to call if you're going to keep up.
And I think you have some good ideas. I think the idea of active to active is fine. I think the giving up something when you combine is fine, but this is going to take a whole committee, not just eight of you, to really go through this. And I don't know whether staff should tackle this alone or there should, I mean, if you're serious tonight about trying to look at this, then there should be a work group to look at this and think about it. And then you know this is all tied to, we're still waiting for the winter dredge survey. And that's something I wanted to bring up earlier, that some of the suggestions, such as the doubler run suggestion, you know, do you really want to meet before the winter dredge survey? Tonight was to give you a chance to flush out some ideas, but the next meeting would be probably in early May, unless you had a burning urge to get together and work on things, and I'd hate to see that some of the other committee members wouldn't have that same urge and that we're still in the same situation of not even having a quorum. We came close.
I think we have it now with Mr. Cox.
No, you're still one short.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, how big is this for you for 2014? Or is this, because this wouldn't get in place for 2014, I don't think.
No.
It would
just
not.
It's just a way for the guy that got stuck with a 100-pot license,
right,
which is now an 85-pot license,
right,
to build his license. Now, if he buys somebody's 300 or somebody's 100 or somebody's 500, he's going to have to give up what he's adding. You give up a certain percentage of it to get, but it's the only way they're going to be able to build up unless they just go out and buy 300. If you look out there, there's probably not a whole lot of 300 and 500 pot licenses for sale. You can probably find quite a few 100s.
But I mean, one crabber is not going to catch as much as two crabbers. If I take your pot and fish them, I mean, you know what I'm saying? You're still reducing the amount of harvesters, which
you're reducing the amount of pots that are going to be eligible to be fished.
Mr. Cox was patiently waiting to speak, and I haven't been able to get fit him in.
Here we go again. Years and years and years. I know you can answer this. I asked this 10 years ago. Probably need law enforcement. How many tickets have been issued over the last 10, 12 years for people fishing more pots than they were licensed to fish? The last time I asked this was years and years ago, and it was zero then.
They got some guys down.
Well, it's not zero, but it's very, 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 very few.
Remember, I opposed this way, way back, saying it was impossible. That was impossible to enforce, and I still believe that. I still believe it's impossible.
It's few and far between because you know the effort involved.
Yep.
With pulling all the pots.
I said it many years ago. Put two on a buoy.
Yep.
And I'll repeat the same thing. Put three on a buoy. 50 on a trot line. So I mean, getting back to this pot limit. I said it then, and I'll say it now. It's a joke. I mean, having a pot limit was a joke, just like the 12-point management plan was 15 years ago. I said that was. So, anyway.
Mr. Moore.
I know the 900 number causes a lot of rub, for good reason. But one difference in Maryland and Virginia is you can only pot in the main stem of the bay, correct, Rob?
Right.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if we were going to make it apples to apples and give everyone 900 pots and close our trips to pots, I'm not sure everyone would take that.
Wouldn't be very fun.
No.
I agree.
I guess sometimes it gets lost when we talk about the 900 pot being a rub.
I agree with your suggestion. Maybe we need to form a work group committee, but there were two comments from the public that I didn't get if we can take time to.
I just wanted to ask a question. Now, when I got my 300 pot license, I guess this matter goes up and down the number anyway, it was for in the rivers. The 500 pot license was supposed to be just in the bay.
and then there was a 100 pot limit for new entrants. I see there's a bunch of different ones, so I haven't paid attention to some new regulations in the last 4 or 5 years or whatever, because it hasn't really affected me. However, is a guy with a 500 pot license allowed to bring his 500 pots out of the bay and put them into the river?
Yeah.
So he should.
55.
Okay, all right. That would be, you know, what I thought would be fair. But if he's got a 500 pot license, I guess he could leave 200 out in the bay and 300 in the river.
We just only bring 255.
The
I just bring 255. I leave the other ones on the shore.
Yep.
Of course, then they bring them all in, and who can count
them? You just count on my good faith.
Yeah, but, I mean, I've been told people just bring in boatloads.
People buy 85 pot licenses and set 300. So what's different?
Yeah, I mean, I could set a pot out there without a number.
Stay there forever.
That's what I'm saying.
Exactly. Mr. Sanford?
Yeah. I was under the impression you're only allowed, I think, 200 or 255 in tributaries. Is that, or 300.
Right, well, okay.
Is that correct?
Yeah. My license is for 300, and then every year it drops down. It was 285,
right.
255, up this, up down. I'm using the number because that was the original number that was given. But I'm just saying, I thought if you had a 500 pot license, you had to keep your pots out in the bay. I didn't realize you could bring them all 500 into the river.
I can't.
No, you can't.
It's a pot limit.
Right, well,
for the river, but it's not enforceable.
Enforcement ought to be out there to enforce it.
What if they got more than one license on the boat, though?
Yeah, I understand that, you know, so they're working two licenses. But if they're not?
I don't think, yeah.
Mr. Powers?
I understand.
Rob, I think we've got consensus on this committee that there is a desire to see about a way to combine crab pots. And when you're making the consideration, also consider family members and disabilities and such as part of it. And that I think we also have a consensus on the committee that any such system should be structured so that it's active pots that are being combined. And
yep.
that
That's
there
all you can buy right now is active, okay. right?
Okay. Well, active, when I say active, I mean active and seriously active, not just the 10 days a year or 5 days a year active.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that you should consider when you're discussing it, and that certainly any discussion on that should have it so that it's effectively the conservation matter will come in because it does end up any combination requires a reduction in the total number of pots. So that's something to go back and work for. I believe that.
And you lose a harvester too, not just the amount of pots. You still lose a harvester. You're not going to catch the same amount of crab.
And you could lose a harvester unless you have a cousin that or mother or sister or somebody who's got a 100-pot license and you got a 300 and you're slowing down on your working and you can transfer that one for free so you sell this one. And that stuff happened with the buyback too. But the point is that I think that's something staff should look into, and we will get full committee. We always have full committee in the fall. And that would be the time to discuss it.
Mr. Raleigh?
Staff can look into it, but I really am serious that there should be committee members involved.
That's
everyone's,
fine.
Everyone's very busy. I think what I would recommend are two things. One, if you go down this road, one thing you need to consider is a control date, because it could end up that this is an invitation for what we talk about, false reporting. Of course, you could use years back, not just current last year or something like that. The other thing is we should have the full committee here. This gives those who heard the proposals tonight and the ideas tonight time to think about it and bring it to the rest of the committee. And then at that point, I hope that the chair will appoint, you know, a little task group to work on this, and staff will pitch in as well. But in the end run, it'd be a lot better that way, to do it that way, rather than staff. I mean, we have a history of bringing two and three or more proposals on the same idea before the committee says that looks okay. And I don't want to do that. So I am thinking of staff.
Okay. And the other thing, the only way you're going to control – the number of pots that are actually in the water is tags.
I mean, honestly...
And we've been down that road, and it's gotten support, and then it just died.
I mean, I'm going to be honest with you, dude. With the amount of crab and stuff costing so much these days, it's not... People ain't running to go out... It's not like what you think. I know you think that people ain't running to do it. It's not... People ain't beating down the doors. That's why you can still buy crab pot licenses and stuff on Craigslist. Now get on there and go look for your rockfish tags or some oyster ground with something on it or some scallop permits. That's the difference. People aren't dying to run out there to set all these pots, because if they were, it's very readily. You go up to Eddie Heath, go buy them, and you go right on Craigslist and buy it. A couple thousand dollars for the permit is not what's holding all these people up from running out there. That's not going to happen. I mean,
what I'm not talking about is extra people in the crabbing, in the industry. I'm talking about the people crabbing with more pots than they're legally allowed to.
Well, the bushel.
That's the bushel limit actually was something we did last year that should really address that.
Honestly, I don't see that many people that are out there. We've got a lot bigger problems than that. I'm afraid. I wish that was the biggest problem we had, and we could put tags on them, and it would be crabs for everybody. But you're not going to notice not one difference next year when you go drop that drudge in that survey. If you tag them, if we don't even crab this year, you might not even notice a difference next year. So, I mean, it doesn't matter.
One of the reasons we did the bushel limit was because the tagging system just wouldn't work at the time. You lose too many pots, lose too many buoys, and you lose your tags, and it just won't work. So we've been down that road. That's what the bushel limit was supposed to help do. You don't put, if you can catch 25 basses, crabs, or 200 pots, you don't put 500 overboard. That's why we did that.
At this point, we'll form a committee to work on a proposal.
Can we have a consensus if everybody agrees on the...
I agree.
On that, people who are disabled, and if you get some, if you put two licenses together, you lose percentage. I'd like to get a consensus on that anyway, see if everybody's in agreement or not.
Mr. Raleigh?
May I make a suggestion that we wait until the committee is here fully in a quorum, and then that gives time to those who have some advanced ideas to refine them and to, you know, we hope bring the rest of the committee along. And then at that point at our next meeting, then a little task group could be formed to look at this along with staff. Is that acceptable?
Well, then I'd make a recommendation that we have a meeting not 6 months from now.
Right. Well, that's what I brought up earlier, if I may address that again. Typically, we don't meet until the winter dredge survey results come out. They're going to be a little bit later this year from what I understand than April.
I agree with that. We got some numbers.
So that's what we're meeting for tonight, to get some ideas, get some thoughts, get the rust off of everyone. And if you wish to meet in between now and early May, just say so, and we'll set up a meeting.
Everybody in agreement?
I mean, it would be kind of pointless to meet again until we have the
until we got some numbers to go by. We need some numbers.
That's why I brought it up.
I agree.
So the drudge survey would probably be done like March or April, so you're thinking maybe the end of April?
I think in early May we're going to be ready to meet with you.
Some little bit.
Yeah, that's what it's going
to
take.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think we should wait until definitely all the hard numbers are in, because we're just kind
of
talking.
And if you know some of the other committee members, please ask them to join you.
Mr. Powers?
Rob, can you send out a letter to the committee members like you did this past time that was a little update? It doesn't have to be really big, but just that we talked about this and that there was consensus that we move forward with it, and it'll be one of the topics and a little bit of the background.
Sure.
Thank you.
Moving forward. Next item on the agenda, the CMAQ proposed management measures for 2014.
So you've already talked about one, that you're going to look at this, but you want the full committee to do that. You probably want the full committee to talk about management measures. This is put on there as a courtesy to you. Again, it It hinges on the winter dredge survey results, but we were very understanding of the comments we received last year that we don't give you a chance to come up with any ideas because we wait until the winter dredge survey and then it's too late. That's why we're meeting tonight in February, and that's why we have this on the table. It's an invitation for you if you have something that you think should go forward and be hinged to the winter dredge survey results, which, you know, everyone would like to see good results, then, you know, we can let the commission know about it.
Mr. Powers?
There was a Waterman Stakeholders series of meetings last winter. Did the results of that come up with anything that, I guess you were, I don't know who at the table was involved with those meetings. I know Ken was doing
industry
it.
Industry panel, are you talking about?
Are you talking about the drudge when we all met about the
drudge? No, there was an industry panel outside of the commission. Right. They met several times.
Ty and Mark or
yeah.
Ken.
Is there anything that's coming out of that we should be bringing forward to staff through this committee to address the crab fishery? Okay.
Well, actually, didn't we discuss the black sponge issue?
Yeah. I mean, we discuss that every year.
Yeah.
That's good.
Something needs to be done about that. I mean, that's impossible. You're out there looking at going by a chart. I mean, talk to any eye doctor. You put them in the basket, and then you're worried about getting pinned up. I mean, you're on bushel limits. The whole bay is off limits. I mean, that's hard up. And, I mean, and you want to talk about waste, and you got to dump them back overboard dead. I mean, that's just silly. Or they need to put that in a different, classify that as a different kind of law, because I shouldn't be have to worry, look over my shoulder, honestly. I mean, do we have a meter to stick on them to tell which one's too dark and what's not? I mean, some people wear glasses, some people wear contacts. Everybody, and sometimes you start when it's dark in the day. I mean, it needs to be changed to where, I mean, that's hard. You got to ride around every day wondering if you're going to get your license taken away or something like that, because, I mean, something needs to be done about that, because that's crazy.
Mr. Sanford?
Yeah, do we know the percentage of crabs that are actually thrown back? Do we know how many bushels a year are thrown back? At all? Is that number available or?
You don't report it.
I mean, correct me. The percentage of crabs die, it's basically between 60% and 80%. Is that correct or not?
I mean, nobody knows what happens to them when you throw them back over.
Is that in the summer?
And that's why we changed it so there's no black sponge crab law after July 1st or sometime.
Yep. Right. Well, my thing is if we're on bushel limits, and I mean, I hate to even say this, but if we're on bushel limits, if we need to compensate, drop the bushel limits so we can keep those crabs. And that, to me, because, I mean, we're throwing the crabs back, a large percentage die and move on. You know,
even in the spring, if you catch a lot of them in a pot, like using those, I mean, that's waste. And plus, I mean, that's crazy.
It's a waste of the resource.
There's nowhere. I mean, how is that enforceable? I mean, if you're a cop standpoint or if you're the harvester, I mean, that's just terrible. I mean,
Mr. Rob,
writing somebody a ticket for saying you think.
I was going to say, I guess we'll look at the summons records to see how much of an issue this is. We do have, and, you know, you participated in this, we do have new guidelines for violations and how many violations you can have before you appear before the commission under 28.2.232 revocation issue. But it takes some pretty good violations to get here, you know, on your first try, and those are usually related just to oysters and condemned areas. But so we'll look at the summons. The other thing is you have to remember that in 2000, Mr. Fail Metzger, if I have that name right, from the Northern Neck, and some of the legislators were very keen on stopping sponge crabbing, period.
Yep.
I had to work up data, which was impossible to do, and had to call industry, had to call Johnny Graham and others to work up a proposal so that there could be a two-week closure, which is what it all softened out to be, a two-week closure for sponge crabbing. and that never came about. So just be aware that just because it's been a dozen years doesn't mean there aren't still those thoughts out there about sponge crabs. And I think Dr. Lipschitz is going to be the source for, you know, the wise management approach that if there's going to be sponge crab harvest, just when and where it should take place. And this was a big issue with the commission with Dr. Lipschitz back in 2007. And I think it was 2007 when it fell back to where it stands now as to when you have to put back the dark-colored sponges. So I can, you know, next time I'll furnish the information on summonses, see how that really looks, if that looks like a big problem. You know, you kind of go from there.
Mr. Diggs, I'll let you reply, and we've got one comment from the public, too.
I mean, you can tell an undersized crab. You can tell everything like that. There's a measure. I mean, it's just hard. I mean, there's no line and stuff. I mean, that's like just – and we've reduced the law back and stuff. You used to couldn't keep them, and we haven't seen any difference one way or the other. And I'm just saying it's something – I mean, that's an unneeded burden to have on people or to have an unenforceable law. I mean, think about it. If a woman's – like, just because she has a sponge on the back don't mean nothing. If a woman's 1 month pregnant or 8 months pregnant, pregnant's pregnant. So the eggs inside or out, it don't make no difference. I don't understand. You've got the whole sanctuary in the middle of the bay. If you're crammed up in that little box, you should let the people keep them. Otherwise, think about it. You take all those crabbers and then shove them up in a creek in a ditch somewhere to go work on your juvenile crabs and your shedded crabs and stuff like that. I mean, are you really doing it a favor by not letting the people stay out there by shoving more effort up into the creeks and stuff? I mean, for something that hasn't shown, they can't put a percentage on it, and it's very debatable, and it's hard to enforce. Something just needs to be done about it. That's all I'm – that's where I stand on it.
I'll just let Mr. Diggs talk.
Okay.
One thing I would like to add to that is, you know, when the Black Sponge Law was put into force, the sanctuary was a lot smaller. It's been increased in size considerably since that law was put in effect. You know, it's been proven by VIM scientists and the Smithsonian Institute, you know, that the majority of the female spawning stock is in that sanctuary during the summer months in the early spring or late spring, and that's why we're kept out of there. So, you know, it makes economical and sense, as well as, you know, getting the best results of your resource by letting us keep those that we catch outside the sanctuary. Maybe change the law that while the sanctuary is open, there's no black sponge law. But once the sanctuary closes and you can't go in there anymore, then you can keep a black sponge. Or since there's been no negative results from the July 15 to the July 1st, keeping the black sponge that you move it to beginning of June to an earlier time. Or just do away with, you know, we all want to do away with it.
I mean,
it's just a nuisance to...
It'd be different if you knew you were the good or what's what. It would make a lot of difference.
It's not black. Yeah, that's what I mean. You got 6 through 13.
But I mean, humans, everybody sees different, interprets colors different.
I have a feeling if more members of the committee were here, we'd probably hear the same thing.
Right.
We have been hearing that for a while. The only
forever.
Recourse I can think of is to work with Dr. Lipschitz on this, have him look at it, because there is data involved that VIMS has, and then, you know, make a report back to you. That's all we can do. It was formed in 1996 is when this came into effect, and it was loosened up, as Ty mentioned, to get it back to July 1. So, you know, we'll look at that again and get a report back to you. So does that sound reasonable? Okay.
There was one comment in the public.
Yes, ma'am. Mr. Davis covered it. Pregnant's pregnant. I don't care when you about it, ain't going outside. It's prey. I think it's a waste. You know, a spun crab, I don't know how many up there crab. I know a few of them up there crab. But a spun crab, they don't live that long. You know, we're over, she's dead anyway. Be modeling. So.
Mm-hmm. Bunch has been trapped.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Trapped and sat there all night. Mm-hmm. Ain't got a whole lot of light to it.
I think we should look at starting June 1st, too, instead of July 1st.
Or just do away with it all together.
Or do away with it.
It's unnecessary.
Right,
Mr. Farrington.
You know, like Ken said, too, is it's one of the laws that creates an issue with crabbers and forces them to go try to catch a male crab or... You know, basically just leave and go catch male crabs. And the male population is on a downward swing.
Or you catch shedded sooks.
When you're catching shedded sooks, you're normally trying to catch male anyway. But that's the bottom line, is it takes a lot of crabbers. Not a lot, because there aren't that many anyway anymore, but it just pushes crabbers up into the rivers and tributaries, creeks, because they're not going to take the risk of getting a black sponge ticket.
It makes it bad for buyers, too, because, you know, you come in and say everything's good, then you get stopped down the road, and then the buyer gets a ticket for having over 10, 12 black ones in a basket. So it's just a ridiculous law all the way around, because it's been proven you could put a busted sook in a basket, and she could darken up more in the basket. So it could be light brown, and by 3 hours later, she could get darker. So you could be checked 3 hours later, and it could be all brown, and you could get your ticket as a buyer because they darken up more in the basket. So that's what I'm saying. Even as a buyer, it's a horrible law.
Mr. Raleigh?
Yeah, despite what I've heard, I just want to make sure you understand, I probably wouldn't support getting rid of it. I think it's still, you got that spring spawn that's into May.
How about push it to June 1st? Would that be a possibility?
I think stepwise is the way to go. You know, I think you get more support for it that way.
I'd be the first one to put motion in. Can we look at June 1st?
You can't make a motion.
We don't have a quorum, sorry.
But we'll get back to you on that item when we have the winter drink.
We'll make it a double.
So now you have two items tonight so far. Okay, you have the idea of combining crab pots, which has to be fleshed out with full committee and get a little task force going, if you want to call it that, to include staff, and then looking at the data that VIMS has that Dr. Lipschitz said he would go through and will report back about pushing this back to June 1.
Okay.
Hey, Mr. Lipkin, I know you can't really give us any numbers, but how has the drug survey been? Just basically, has it been decent, horrible, okay? I mean, do we have anything to look forward to here? Or?
I can't really give you numbers.
Just basically, has it looked okay?
I haven't seen any kind of big increase. I'll tell you that.
No big increase from last year or prior years? Or?
Mr. Farrington?
An increase?
Yeah, I got another.
I have not seen it.
Oh, okay. You have not seen one.
I have not.
You ain't seen no decrease, have you?
We'll
see.
What's like y'all's best toe, like a bushel?
Okay.
What's like y'all's best toe, like a basket or two? Three baskets? Like, what's y'all's best toe, like, ever that y'all get normally?
Just a handful, right?
Ever?
No, like this year. Like, what y'all's just, I mean, an average, a ballpark.
Ballpark, right? I can't really tell you because we're still right in the middle of dredging. And the data doesn't get processed on deck. It comes back, and then it gets entered. So it's really a little premature.
Do you think you may have not seen any increase because of cold weather this year? It's been a lot colder weather than years before. Do you think they've buried it?
He doesn't know anything.
Have you seen a winter chill?
Well, I mean,
they've buried it.
You want me to twist his arm?
It's colder. They were drunk.
Yeah.
Well, what I did hear, and Ron knows this, is... You remember they had that kill in Maryland of about 35% back in 2011. So I think what I understand is you can expect the kill in Maryland to be up from last year. But they haven't done that yet. They do that after the survey ends. But that's one thing to think about as well. It's always something. So
they probably died from old age because we didn't catch them this year.
They stayed in sanctuary also.
Everything's based on survey.
All right. Any other further discussion?
Okay.
new business that we haven't already discussed.
Well, I wanted to bring up another management measure. If we're done with the black sponge crab, everybody done with that?
The woman's on a comment. Are you okay?
About two topics.
New business, I think.
Oh.
Okay. Mr. Ferris?
The one thing I want to be looked at, I would like to have looked at by CMAQ and anybody and everybody, is this trigger thing that's going on about dredging. In my opinion, it's discriminative. We're discriminating against the dredge fishery again, which is a crab fishery, just a gear in the crab fishery. And I think that the trigger or triggers, whatever it may be, need to be set for the whole fishery and be used to manage the whole fishery if it means giving people less bushels per gear category or more or longer days or shorter days, whatever it may be. Every gear type should be managed by the trigger or triggers, not just saying, well, we're going to use triggers or trigger to allow dredging to open back up. Because more conservation can be saved in reducing pot category limits in a very short amount of time in the most important, two most important harvests. That's the spring harvest and the fall harvest, because it's a year-round bushel limit, just by opening up a three-month dredge fishery to 1.5 million pounds. So there's a whole lot of math that could be calculated and a lot of conservation equivalency added up way above and beyond 1.5 million pounds. So the dredge fishery doesn't need to be targeted by triggers. And that's what I wanted to say.
Any discussion?
Well, just a little bit related to that. Do we have a date when CBSAC review might be done?
No.
No.
Right?
No.
It won't be too long. There are three triggers, just to remind you. You all got the information. It's the juvenile abundance, the female one-plus abundance, and then the exploitation rate. So I guess that's a fair comment, because I certainly would have liked to have seen some of the 2012 March crabs not taken, because that was a big spike. That was 2.4 million pounds, which was way up, and the effort was way up, and then it turned out the industry didn't have much to do after May. So, I mean, yeah, I think in a general sense, there probably needs to be, I don't know what I call them, triggers like the ones that went for the dredge fishery, but I suppose you could call them that. There needs to be an awareness that certain conditions would promote reductions in bushel limits. It would be set up as a framework, I would call it. But that's going to need some development to do that. You have to develop that and make sure you have at least consensus on the committee. There's nothing wrong with it at all.
We had one comment in the public. Was that in relation to this?
It had to do with earlier. I had my hand up, but we went back.
Sorry.
But I just wanted to say that, you know, I heard about, you know, the 100 days and talking about people who maybe haven't crabbed, and I just wanted to remind the committee that there are some of us who are intentionally doing other fisheries because of the crab situation, and that shouldn't be, they shouldn't be penalized for that. Thank you. Shouldn't be penalized for that, nor should people be encouraged to make false reports, which Mr. O'Reilly alluded to, and I think it's true. Some people report because they're afraid that if they don't make false reports that it could affect, you know, their future or the value of their crab pot license, and I think that's, you know, a wrong message to send to crab pot license holders, you know, is that if you don't, if you're trying to do other fisheries. In the 100-day part, I was going to say, you know, you might be doing three or four different things. Many of the people on the panel don't just crab. You know, you do lots of other things in the fisheries, right? So you might only be crabbing 100 days, but you might be fishing 100 days, and you might be having oystering part of the time, and you know, you work with gear depending on the season. So maybe that makes more sense. Am I making any sense?
Yes. Thank you.
Can I make a comment?
Question, Mr. Farrington?
There are a lot of people who crab part-time, which you could say would be less than 100 days a year, whatever. And there are a lot of people like myself who like to crab all year round. And I can't do it because I don't dredge anymore. So I'm forced to go oystering. I don't fish. I won't clam anymore. And, you know, to me, 3.5 months, 4 months of my industry was taken away in 08. So, you know, there are people who would just assume crab 12 months a year and could make a whole lot better living doing that than trying to scrape oysters on 8-bushel limit or tong oysters with 20-foot shafts and an ebb tide line.
I hear you. I miss crabbing too, great. I really would like to be back there crabbing. I miss it more than I could tell you.
On dog for 12, 13 cents.
Any other discussion?
No.
New business?
I'm good.
You're good. Any new business that we haven't already discussed earlier?
Bang the hammer.
No hammer, but meeting's adjourned.
Good luck.
Thank you, Liz.
Yes.